Are you chasing the wind? Are you chasing the wind? Many times we live a life in one of two ways. Either we are chasing things that we just want to obtain, or we want to achieve, or we just have to have these things. Or we're going through life absolutely with no goals, no dreams, and we're just living it, and whatever comes this way, we just follow the winds of the day. And I want us to think about this question today. If we're at either one of those things, are we chasing something that really is making no difference? Are you living a life that is being wasted? Are you living a life that at the end there's going to be nothing to show for it? Or are we living a life where we're not even chasing anything? And again, there's going to be nothing to show for it, because we just go and we hope maybe something good happens that we can do. But we need to begin to look at our life and begin to take control of our life. God has given us so much, but he expects us to begin to take what he has given and begin to weave it into our life. And so I want us to ask that question today. And so watch this.
Does care a lot about his looks. I'm a living example of a guy that does care a lot about his looks. I can't tell you how long I've looked in the mirror just worrying about how good or bad I look. It made my day good or bad. I had the long hair look, kind of to the side, and then kind of just swing your hair like that. And I started wearing Hollister and name brand clothes like Hollister and Quiksilver, Hurley, just stuff like that. I did think that wearing the right clothes would make me happy, because in turn it would make people like me, it would make girls like me, and that was really important for me too. I wanted to be accepted by girls, I wanted to look good for girls, and I thought that would bring me happiness, I thought that would bring me joy. I was very confident in myself, I was playing tennis, I was in good shape, and I got hurt. I injured my back, and of course I couldn't play tennis, I couldn't do anything, and I couldn't work out, so I would go home, I would eat like I usually do when playing tennis, which is a lot, and I started just gaining weight, and I started to notice it a year later, like, okay, I'm gaining weight, I don't fit well in my shirts anymore, I don't fit well in my pants anymore, and oh my gosh, girls are gonna see me like this, and they only like guys with like a six pack and a nice body. And at the same time, I started getting really bad acne. And I remember dreading to wake up every morning and go to school because of how bad my acne was. Every class period, I wanted to put my head down and not look up or talk to anybody. I couldn't look anybody in the face and talk to them. It was that bad. I couldn't stand just the way people thought about, the way I thought people thought about me. When I didn't look good, when I was at my worst, I thought I had lost everything. It really left me with a sense of emptiness and just loneliness.
We sometimes think about that as just a teenage thing or a younger thing, but yet every one of us, whether we're going through that specifically like our young people, or us as adults, or even senior citizens, there's something in our life that is the focus of our happiness. There's something that we think we need to be happy. There's something in our life, whether it is our looks, whether it's what other people think about us, whether it's the ability to do things that we want to do, whether it is work, whether it's accomplishments, whether it's money, whatever it is, what are you chasing? What is it in your life that you think you need to be happy? Is it activities? Is it experiences? We need to begin to think about that, because here's the thing. Just like we saw there, there's coming a day where you will lose it. He got hurt. There's coming a day something will happen. You know what? Your friends are going to leave you. There's going to be something that will happen that you're going to lose everything. If you have put all of your hope and all your effort into those things, just like him, he was left lonely, despairing. What good is everything? It's gone in a second. We need to understand that. Every one of us, and some of us older people, and as Christians, it's a much subtler thing. We say, oh, that's not me, because we watch that and we say, I'm not doing that. But yet there's other things that we are putting all of our hope on. And we need to understand that it's going to be gone one day. And what is it that focuses our decisions, our priorities, our values? What is it that your heart is longing for? I want us to open up, and today we're going to look in the book of Ecclesiastes. And I just want the Holy Spirit to touch your heart today, because there is an answer to this. Starting in chapter 1, verse 2. This was written by Solomon. We know one of the wisest, richest, strongest kings ever. God had blessed him. He was given everything that he wanted. And this was his result after a lifetime of experience and seeking after the same things that you guys want, that all of us want. This is what Solomon teaches us, and we need to be willing to be taught today. He says this in verse 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. And this is referring to himself. Vanity of vanities, everything, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? You see, Solomon says, what have I got from everything that I have accomplished? He said, you know what? I have got all the girls. I got to do all the things I wanted to do. I got to enjoy all the things I wanted. I got to get all the new knickknacks and newest things. But he said, at the end, I'm empty. It means nothing. Who cares what is going to happen? What are they going to remember of me? Just these things that make no difference. Everything is vanity. In other words, it doesn't mean anything. It's like holding sand. You try and hold it, but it's all going to go through your fingers. We need to understand what matters in life. And I know this is the hardest thing, that when you're in the middle of it, no, my friends do matter. And this is what Solomon says. You think so right now, but you need to not be deceived by that they're not going to be there. And we just cannot believe that. And I know the younger we are, sometimes you think that you will never, but you have to begin to understand that these things are not going to last. And we as adults do the same thing. There is nothing that matters after we work so hard and we give ourselves for these things. And he goes on and he expounds on it. It says in verse 16, he says, I said to my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. But I perceive that this also is but a striving after wind. He says that, you know what? Here's something that we chase. We chase knowledge. We chase wisdom. He says, I have been the smartest person there ever was. And yet, he says, it means nothing. He says, at the end of it, I know more about this world than anyone in the world has ever known. And we know that Solomon, for his time, way back in the day, he had discovered things about biology and geology and scientific things that no one at that time had ever discovered. Because God had given him this ability to be wise and knowledgeable. And yet he says, wisdom and knowledge, education is nothing. And many times that's what we are chasing. We want to be educated. We want to know. We love to study things. But I'm telling you, we cannot begin to love that. That cannot be the priority, because wisdom and knowledge is nothing. If you know everything at the end, who cares? Your life is not based on what you know or how far you achieve, how many degrees you have. I know we want to accomplish those things, but I'm going to tell you, your life is not defined by your degrees. Your life is not accomplished by your life experience. Some of us have never gone to college, but we are still proud of what we have learned in life. Your wisdom and your knowledge is chasing after wind, he says. You're never going to catch it. Because once you know something, there's something else you don't know. There's always going to be something that you don't know. So we need to stop chasing after these things. He goes on in chapter 2. He says, okay, I said to my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But he said, behold, this also was vanity. He says, I decided, okay, if wisdom and knowledge does not fulfill me, I'm going to just go please myself. I'm going to enjoy every pleasure in the world. How many sounds? That sounds pretty good. You might as well make the most of life. You know what? If that doesn't fit, then just enjoy life. Isn't that what life is about? If we don't enjoy it, then what use is it? But Solomon said, you know what? I every pleasure there was, I enjoyed it. And he says at the end, it means nothing. Pleasure cannot be your goal. Guys, I know we reach for pleasure because to be happy, we use the word happy equal to pleasure. If I don't have pleasure, then I'm not happy. See, that's wrong. We are not understanding the meaning of our life. You were created for a purpose, and pleasure is not the purpose. Pleasure is great for a few moments, but it will leave you empty. It's like burning out a candle. When the candle's burnt out, there's nothing but a puddle of wax that is not really good for anything else. Pleasure is good, but it will burn out. We need to understand that. Do not live your life for pleasure. Do not live your life for what your friends can do for you, for what we can get from working, from retiring. Don't we think, oh, when I retire, that's what I'm living for, because then I'm just going to enjoy life. Adults, you are deceived. And we are falling for that, because that becomes the identity. Now, I'm not saying these things are bad, but when they become our identity, that's what we are chasing. It is burning us up inside and leaving nothing left. We cannot chase after pleasure. So it says, he went on, he says, so I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom was still with me. And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all of my toil. And this was my reward for my toil. Then I considered all my hands had done and the toil that I had expended in doing it. And behold, everything was vanity. It was all chasing or striving after the wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. Maybe you're not someone that cares much about school and education. Maybe you're not one that gives yourself to pleasure. Maybe you're someone that I'm going to achieve. I'm going to do something. I'm going to make something of my life. That sounds good, right? Wouldn't God want us to do that? Solomon said, I did greater things than anyone else. We know that Solomon built the temple of God, the greatest temple ever. And you would think that would be a great thing. God, look what I did. But he said, I found no pleasure in toil, in work. Some of us, we work and we find our identity in working hard and achieving great things. I want to achieve something great. But Solomon said, everything I achieved, at the end, who cares? People might have appraised me, and maybe I like that. I like when people, you know, give me good compliments and everything for what I've done. But he said, even those become empty. Who cares if everyone loves me and always praises me because what I've done? Inside, I'm empty. And I know you can't imagine that empty. I'll love that. But you got to listen to the truth of people that have gone before you. They are empty because achievement and work does not fill your heart. He achieved everything and yet felt worthless. He goes on. You think, what else can we chase after? But he says this in chapter 5. He says, guard your steps when you go into the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they don't even know that what they are doing is evil. You know what Solomon found? He found that even chasing after religion, serving God, is chasing the wind. You know what? Offering sacrifices to God, doing all the right things, going to church and doing all these things is chasing the wind. Because it's not in your service to God. It's not in your religious fervency that you find identity. This is vanity. It's chasing the wind. You might say, man, then what in the world can I do? If I can't serve God and find fulfillment, if I can't find fulfillment in pleasure, if I don't find fulfillment in learning and wisdom and education and being smart, if I don't find fulfillment in achievement, in working hard and making something of my life, then what use is there? We're going to see that there is a purpose to our life. But we have to ask ourselves, what are we chasing? What is it in your life that you value? Is it education? Is it doing good in school or in your workplace? Is it getting that next promotion? Is it accomplishing things? Is it finding pleasure? Is it living life with a family and enjoying all these experiences? Because you know what? Family is everything, and we hear everyone say that. It's all about people in your life. It's all about loving others, because at the end, what do you have but people? But I'm telling you, people in your life will leave you empty. Because when you stand before God, you don't have anyone else with you. Your family's not there. Friends are not there. You will not be judged by the people in your life. And we are guilty of even saying that as Christians a lot. That is not the focus. Getting other people saved is not what's going to fulfill your heart. That may sound like sacrilege at church, but that's not the focus. That's chasing the wind. Now, all of those things that I've talked about, we're going to come back around. We're going to see these are good things. They are gifts from God, but they cannot be what we are chasing. They cannot be our focus that we are grasping for. They cannot be the basis of what we decide. When we make a decision to do something, it cannot be based on those things. You see, even in the New Testament, this is what Jesus said. Jesus said, whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses it for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? What does it gain you to gain the whole world and to lose your soul? What does it matter that you are the smartest person in the world? What does it matter if you experience every pleasure there is in the world? What does it matter if you achieve greatness and you gain all the money and you earn a great life? What does it matter if you're the most religious person and pious and moral? And yet you stand before God and he says, I don't know you. It means nothing. We need to understand this today. This hits us right where we are. What are you living for? What are you living for? Well, let's go to see what Solomon says. So if Solomon has nothing good to say about life, is there anything good that he has to say? Yes. At the very end of the book, after he goes through all of Ecclesiastes saying that, man, I've learned that everything is really meaningless, this is what he says. chapter 12, starting verse 13, he says, here's the end of the matter. After everything has been said, all has been heard. This is what he says. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. He says, here's the end result. Fear God. Now this whole thing is fear God. It's not being afraid of God. Nothing's worthless, so I'm just going to live my life, cowering before God. That's not what he's talking about. He says, fear God. In other words, this is a knowledge of God so much that he is so passionate in your heart that it's like fear. Fear is one of the greatest passions in our heart. How many know that when we're afraid, it can take us over? He's saying, when you fear God, when God himself is more important to you than anything else, not getting other people saved, just God himself. You see, when God himself is so important to me that I just love you, God. God, me and you, I just want to know you more. I want to walk with you, God. It's all about just that relationship. He says, follow his commandments. It's not talking about the religious work. It's talking about walking with him. It's talking about knowing God. That is the one thing that matters. You see, again, in the New Testament, it says this, 1 Corinthians 15. Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord, your labor is not in vain. You see, if everything else is in vain, what's the one thing that's not in vain? What I do for God. And not the things I do, but just this relationship of walking with God, knowing God, following in love with God. I want to tell you, there is only one thing that will never let you down. It's loving God. It's loving God. And I know that sounds crazy right now to us. But what does that have to do with paying the bills and doing all that? When you love God, here's the thing. This is what Jesus said. Seek first the kingdom of God and all these other things will be added unto. When God himself is the only thing that's important, you know what comes? He begins to teach you. He begins to give you wisdom and education. You see, when you don't seek that, God brings it when you love him. When you begin to love God with all your heart, you don't have to worry about pleasure because God brings pleasure into your life. You don't grab for it. You let him give it to you. But when you find your pleasure in him, I'm going to tell you, you are going to be happier than you ever could think yourself to be. And it may be in places that you never thought you would be. And it doesn't make sense to the rest of the world. Because if I ask you, would you trade a mansion in Beverly Hills for a prison cell in San Quentin? How many would make that trade? No one. But you see, if Jesus is there with you, I'll be there with Jesus. It's better to be in a prison cell with Jesus. Because I'm telling you, he does something in your heart, guys, that I can't explain to you. You have to trust and you have to experience it. And if you're not willing to experience it, you will grow dry and never understand what I'm saying today. But we have that picture of Paul and Silas who were in a prison cell, beaten and chained. I mean, and when they chained, it was not just in handcuffs. They chained them in painful positions. And yet they were in this prison cell singing praises to God. And I know it doesn't make sense, but there is something that God will give you to experience. And I'm going to say, oh, man, if I choose God, then I'm going to be in prison cells. I'm not saying that, but I don't know. But I'm telling you, there will be a joy that God gives you greater than anything you can experience. Adults, some of us, we are resting on the comfortableness of our life. And we also are not experiencing God because Jesus himself is not the main joy of our life. When we begin to live for God and God alone, that's the only thing that is not in vain. but he gives us back everything else. He gives us achievements. You see, it is when you sacrifice everything and give it to God that God makes you the most accomplished person that you could have ever been without him. You will accomplish more with God than you can on your own. Watch this.
Happiness is a lot about perspective. Heaven is going to be happy. And that's not a theology that says heaven is good and so everything else is going to be bad. Just grin and bear it till we all get there. But it is very real. Jesus said himself, now this is the guy we're calling the Son of God. This is the guy we're saying follow him. This is the guy saying have the same attitude he had. He said for the joy that was set before him, happiness, he endured the cross, despising its shame. And so there was a perspective going on in the mind of Jesus Christ. And for him it was, this is not going to be happy for me. Going to the cross is not going to be happy for me. Going to Gethsemane is not going to be happy for me. Being rejected by my family, by my own community, being misunderstood, being mistreated, being abandoned by my closest friends and followers, being betrayed, that doesn't sound like happiness to me. But he said, for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. And so, you know, the culture, we're in a Prozac culture for crying out loud. And the bottom line for everybody is you got to get happy. You know, whatever makes you happy is what you've got to do. And I think God is saying happiness is great, but where does happiness come from? I think happiness comes from knowing that our lives matter, and nothing will make me happier on this earth than knowing that my life is going to count. There are people, and you know, we always kind of go back to the worst case scenario, but there are people sitting in prison cells right now, not because they're criminals or murderers or thieves, but because they spoke the name of Jesus Christ. And they've been separated from their families, they've been persecuted, and they're alone in the darkness right now. And they're sitting there alone in the darkness because they wanted their lives to count. And I don't know how happiness translates to them right now, but I know that there is a residual in their soul that's got to say, my life is making a difference. I stood for something that mattered. And we're over here in America living in the lap of, you know, excess in every way possible, talking about happiness. And I don't think we have a clue. And I haven't met too many people who are saying, I just want to be happy, who've spent much time in third and fourth world countries. I haven't heard too many people talk about my happiness who have been in the jungles of Africa, or been in the villages of South America, or been through the dark nations of Asia, and have seen the way people live in this world, and then said, you know what really matters to me to be happy? If you've got the perspective that God has on the 6+ billion people that live on this goal, then people's definition of happiness is going to be, I want people to know about Jesus. That's what's going to make me happy. And I want my life to count. That's what's going to make me happy. And if that's people's definition of happiness, I say, let's make our motto, I want to be happy. I just want to be happy. I want to know that God is happy, and he's happy when I give him my love and affection and my worship. And I want to know that people come to know Jesus. And that happens when I pay a price and go tell them. And I want to know that my life counts for something, and that can be in life or death. One of my favorite passages of scripture is in the book of Acts, where Paul and Silas have been arrested for preaching the gospel, and they've been put in the bottom of the prison in the dungeon at night in the dark in stocks. And they've been beaten before that and stripped with their clothes, and so, you know, it doesn't sound like a real happy moment. And it sounds like the place where people are going to go, you know, God, hello? Have you forgotten about me? We're just trying to serve you here. We were just preaching the gospel, and now look what's happened to us. That'd probably be my response, or a lot of her response. You know, God, you didn't hold up your end of the deal. And about midnight, it says, Paul and Silas were singing hymns of praise to God. And my whole life, that has just stopped me dead in my tracks. And I think the reason why these guys were worshiping God in that dungeon is because they had a relationship with him, an intimacy with him, and he was there. And I've never been in a dungeon of a prison at midnight without my clothes on and been beaten to a half inch of my life. But if I ever did and God was in there with me, all wouldn't be lost. And so I think happiness is about God. It's about being with God. It's about loving God. It's about saying, like the psalmist said, whom have I in heaven but you? And on earth, there's nothing I desire but you. For you are the strength of my life, and you are my portion forever. And if we don't discover that, then this whole discussion, to me, is pointless. If God is somebody in the sky that gives us orders and assignments, then I'm out. If God is I'm way up there in heaven, and I give you a blueprint and a guideline of moral behavior, and you go do it, I'm out of here. Because I've got this longing in my soul for more than that. And I believe God is right here, right now. And he's saying, I want to have a relationship with you. And that's what life is all about.
You see, the one thing that matters in life is knowing God. In every area, it's knowing God. And see, when you know Jesus, when you walk with Jesus, when you love him so much, then you're going to want other people to know him. So it's not about doing those religious things. It's I do those things because I know him. I don't come to church because I have to. I come to church because I love God so much. Why would I not want to be here? See, if that's not your motivation to come to church, stop coming to church. I want people that come because we want to come together. That's how the church started, is because it was just a bunch of people who loved Jesus. Let's come together and celebrate our Lord. And yet now it's turned into this religious thing. Now, yes, I wish everyone would come, but I wish they would come for that reason, because you love God. Not everyone is here today because of that reason. The one thing that matters in your life, that's going to fill you, that is going to give you that purpose, is knowing God and loving him and walking with him. That's what happiness is. It's that one thing. I love that one thing. What you do for God is not in vain. Then it's not vanity. Everything else is chasing the wind. Are you chasing the wind, or are you chasing Jesus? There's only one thing that you can catch. You'll never catch the wind. You can catch Jesus. Jesus said, if you seek me with all your heart, you will find me. I will never slip through your fingers. But it's Jesus. Psalm 27:4 says, this is what David said, one thing, only one thing have I asked for the Lord, that I would seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord. There's only one thing David wanted, just to look on Jesus, just to be in the house of God, to see God, just to be with the one who loved us, the one who created us, the one who gives you purpose. And then we know when Jesus did come, the great story of Mary and Martha. Martha was doing all the things for Jesus, but Mary just wanted to sit at his feet. And Martha got upset. Tell her to get up and do something. And he says, but one thing is necessary. And Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. The one thing that's necessary is to love Jesus with all your heart. When you love him more than your friends, when you love him more than your accomplishments, when you love him more than your education, when you love him more than your religion, then you are a full person. One other thing, Jesus looked at the rich young ruler who came to him and said, Jesus, I want to follow you. It said Jesus loved him and said to him, but you lack one thing. Now, many times we get focused on the wrong one thing. You lack one thing. Go sell all that you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. That's not the one thing. That's the doorway to the one thing. It says, and then come and follow me. You see, the one thing that Jesus said is come and follow me, but you got to get rid of things that are keeping you from following me. In our life today, what's keeping you from coming unto Jesus? Is it riches? Get rid of them. If they have a hold on you, get rid of them. Is it family? Now, I'm not saying get rid of them, but you need to move them in your priority. You need to, Jesus put it this way. Jesus said, you must hate your mother and father. Now, it doesn't mean to hate them emotionally. It means to hate them prioritizing them. People that, I hear it all the time. Well, you know, I can't do this for God because, you know, I have family thing. You better check your heart. You might say, well, I can always come to church. Those are always there, but this is not. You know what? That is a wrong view of God. Because no, you can't always come to church. You can't always, that's coming to church for the wrong reason. Now, if that's the case, you're absolutely right. But you see, God himself said, no, I will not always strive with men. Because if I'm always second fiddle to those things and you use that excuse because you think you're justifying it and you're actually feeling good, well, I can always, I'm not putting you behind God. Yes, you are though. But yes, you are. If you are honest with yourself, yes, you are. We need to move people out of that way. If it's accomplishments that's getting in the way for you to come in Christ, Jesus is saying, go and sell all that you have and come and follow me. Jesus is saying, get rid of anything that is getting in the way of making me absolutely the passion of your life. And I'm saying, don't do it unless it's a passion. He doesn't want you to do it as a work. Okay, I'm going to not do anything, but I'm just going to follow God. That's religion. You need to get that out of the way. He says, I want you to love me. I want you to have a passion for me. That is what is going to be the one thing in your life. Are you chasing the wind? Or are you chasing the one thing? Be honest with yourself. Be honest. And then you make a decision. If you choose the one thing, I make you a promise today. He made you a promise today. You will never regret it. It will be hard. There will be costs. But to obtain the most valuable thing in the world, I'll pay the cost. To chase the wind, and at the end of your life, you're going to be empty, dry, with nothing to show for it, and then you're going to stand before God and be sent away. That's the most foolish thing we can do. So we need to decide today, I don't want to chase the wind anymore. I want to chase the one thing that will fill my life.